So Harvard Extension School is in many ways the outsider school of Harvard. Unlike the other schools, we don't have our own faculty. Unlike the other schools, our courses are open enrollment. Unlike the other schools, we don't have a research mission, just a teaching mission. Unlike the other schools, the majority of our courses are offered online. And unlike the other schools, the majority of our courses are offered in the evening. We are the night school of Harvard, the Harvard of night schools. But to many, we're still just night school. So sometimes I wonder about myself after having spent basically a third of my life pursuing three different degrees from three different insider schools of Harvard. Why is it that I feel so comfortable in my work at the Harvard Extension School, so like an insider in the outsider school? And a few weeks ago, Harry Lewis unwittingly answered this question for me. I started teaching at the Harvard Extension School about 15 years ago, both on campus and online. And there were high points. For instance, teaching students how to make a persuasive argument, both local and distance, starting first with speech and then writing it. And there were entertaining points, like the day when I was teaching about the free software movement and Richard Stallman crashed my class. But there was also that feeling of disconnection and distance from students who were taking the classes online. And sometimes the frustration of those kind of occasional technology hiccups that would disrupt teaching or make me feel or look foolish. And so on balance, it was worth it to me to teach online, but I felt like it was kind of a lesser, paler experience to the what I would be able to give to my students if they were in the classroom in front of me. A few years into teaching, I had an experience that fundamentally altered my perspective. I taught all of my students one year in what was then a popular 3D virtual world called Second Life. And to participate in my class, students needed to create an avatar. They needed to go find clothes and dress themselves. They needed to pick a name. And then they needed to teleport or fly to the location of our virtual classroom to have a live text-based discussion section. And the typing was really slow. The avatars were completely goofy. Every once in a while, there would be an interloper who would try to do something like sell us glasses of virtual wine. But I realized that there were certain things that were better about this experience than what I could offer in my face-to-face classroom. For instance, some of the students reported feeling that they could talk about riskier ideas and opinions they had when we were discussing controversial subjects because of the protection that was afforded to them by their avatars and their pseudonyms. Other students who rarely spoke up, if ever, in their face-to-face classes would participate actively in our text-based discussions because they could pre-compose what they had to say, and they didn't have to vie for airtime with more aggressive, talkative students. This technology was clunky. It was a disadvantage in many ways, but there were lots of examples of how it was positive, and I realized that teaching with technology wasn't just a way to reach students who couldn't otherwise be there in my classroom, it had the potential to improve the learning experience for all students. Listening to myself say that now, it sounds kind of trite, old, tired. We've all heard it at this point, but there's still many teachers who have yet to have that personal conversion experience that makes it real for them. And so with my team at Harvard Extension School, we work every day to try to help faculty and students achieve that experience in their classes at Harvard Extension School. We're a long way now, both in terms of technology and teaching methodologies, what we know about what works, from where we were when I was teaching in Second Life. And it's in large part been led by faculty innovators, many of whom are here in the computer science department. Henry Leitner has been a pioneer and ambassador for all of our efforts of online teaching. Margot and Stuart have been pushing the boundaries of what they can do in their face-to-face classrooms each semester that I've heard about what they're doing and, you know, sometimes minorly helped with. And at Extension, we've been focused on developing and adapting technologies that help faculty teach their classes in ways that are personal and interactive and flexible, in contrast to the overarching movement towards the massively scalable. And Harry Lewis's teaching has been an exemplar of this change over time. It was 2001, I think, when I took CS121 from Professor Lewis. It was a key step on what was a very crooked academic path for me. And I just have to take you back a little bit further to set the stage about that. In the late August 1994, I stood in Harvard Yard looking at Matthews Hall, where I was about to be moving in just a couple of weeks. And I had walked through Harvard Yard every single day on my way home from school at Cambridge Rindge and Latin High School, but I just hadn't really looked at it. I had not really looked at all of the people who were there in Harvard Yard. And I asked myself that question that many Harvard freshmen ask themselves, do I really belong here? On my freshman orientation camping trip, I met Peter. He was confidently knitting a sweater as he told me that he was going to audition for the Crocodillos and join the Hasty Pudding. My tall, sunny roommate from Fort Lauderdale, Lisa, knew that she was going to concentrate in ECK and Romance Languages. She was going to make the varsity crew team. She would be an investment banker, and then when she had kids, she was going to stop working. And I can tell you, she did all of that except quitting working. I did not really know what I wanted to do. I took up knitting. I joined the crew team as a coxswain. Academically, it seems like I was actually kind of interested in the same types of things that Guy Steele was telling us about earlier. I signed up for Ancient Greek. I took Philosophy 140, Deductive Logic. And not even knowing that applied math was something I should look at, I signed up for Math 25, an advanced class in multivariable calculus. Within a couple of months, I was in some trouble academically. Ancient Greek was a lot of work, and it was hard. And frankly, I was just unprepared for Math 25. And I ended up taking a serious left turn away from my original set of interests and into the weird and wonderful, but entirely not computational, folklore and mythology concentration. That summer, Harry Lewis became the dean of the college. And while I was casting about in search of direction and belonging, he embarked on a set of policy changes which were ambitious, principled, and probably above all, wildly unpopular. He abolished the upper-class housing choice program in favor of randomization to increase the diversity of the undergraduate residential experience. And none of the students liked this, except that quietly I did, because I had ended up a failed coxswain in the athletics-dominated Mather House surrounded by football players and rowers. I see a few compatriots out there. He cracked down on undergraduate drinking. He took on the issue of how the ad board should handle sexual assault. He raised the minimum standards for what it took to be in good academic standing at the college so that you would have an earlier warning if a student was getting into trouble. The op-eds in the Crimson attacked every policy. Hundreds of students came out in protest of the decisions. A gigantic image of his face hung in the dining hall next to an image of Stalin. At an Adams House dance that I attended. Yes, yes. And for me, I was 100% intimidated. But Dean Lewis took the criticism head on. He stuck to his principles. He stood by his policies. When I graduated, I was much more confident. I was happy, I was proud, but I still had no idea what I wanted to do. And I knew I didn't want to be a doctor. I did not want to be a management consultant. I didn't want to be an investment banker. So I went to law school. In law school, luckily, I took Jonathan Zittrain's life-changing internet and society course. And I learned that code was law in this internet age, and that it was up to me to decide, did I want to be one of the people who was making those laws or one of the people who was reacting to them? So in my third year of law school, I cross-registered into CS50, which was taught by Stuart Schieber that semester. And I spent many happy late nights in the Science Center basement coding and getting help from TFs in silly hats. And sometime around October, I showed up in Stuart's office hours and I said, I love CS50. I want to leave law school and do a PhD in computer science. Channeling his inner Harry Lewis, he very kindly told me that I was completely nuts. But that summer, after I graduated and passed the bar exam, I called up Skadden Arps' law firm and I told them I would not be joining them in New York that fall. Instead, as a special student, I registered to take CS121. So on the first day of class, I was really nervous. Smart, hardworking people had told me that this was the hardest class that they had taken at Harvard. And 3 years after graduating, I was still 100% intimidated by Dean Lewis. But the class was wonderful. I ended up feeling like now I was sitting in the place where I should have started at the beginning. I love the elegance of the ideas. I loved that feeling of suspense and doubt when I was looking at a theorem and I had no idea how I was going to prove it. I loved the collaborative problem-solving office hours in Locker Commons and the thoughtful policy on collaboration that encouraged us to work together to think about the problems, but then had us work individually to write up and explain our solutions. But probably most of all, I loved the automata and the grammar formalisms that Professor Lewis would draw on his transparencies that he used to give his lectures. So 7 years later, Harry Lewis sat on my thesis committee when I defended my dissertation, which was advised by Stuart Schieber and was filled with grammar formalisms. Today, with CS20, Harry has magnified the best and most effective aspects of that course that I took in 2001. He uses pre-recorded lectures so that he can spend his class time interacting with students who are broken up into small groups for collaborative problem solving. His longtime TA, Deborah, is here somewhere, Deborah, does the same at the Extension School, live and online, and also using small groups. It's the kind of teaching, online teaching, and the teaching methodologies that I and my team are trying to encourage every day. And I'm very proud of what we do at the Extension School. And I believe that my team is capable of helping faculty to creatively use technology to improve their classes for all of their students. But it wasn't until a couple of weeks ago that Harry helped me understand why I personally feel so at home at the Extension School. I was sitting in on a meeting of the Harvard Extension School Faculty Council, and the topic under discussion was whether the age for students pursuing an undergraduate degree at Harvard Extension School should be raised. Harry has sat on this faculty council for many years, and he asked, who are the students who would be affected by this change? And our academic dean told him, it's a very small number of students, actually, but for the most part, these are students who could not successfully attend a residential full-time program like the college. They include competitive athletes, performers, deployed military personnel, youthful entrepreneurs who are pursuing their startup dreams, and people with disabilities who can't, for one reason or another, live residentially or pursue their studies full time. And with a characteristically sharp and principled response, Harry said, these are the oddballs? Are we trying to say that there's no place for oddballs here at Harvard? And I realize that in my own way, with my crooked, all over the place academic path, I too felt like an oddball at Harvard. And here it was, Harvard Extension School, a place for all of the academically able oddballs of any age. And so from one oddball, talking to the many others here and elsewhere, I would like for all of us to celebrate that we have a place at Harry Lewis's Harvard.